Oh, there he is.
That's pretty close to right on time.
Going to open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today is Thursday, April 2nd. Give you a couple announcements about our agenda. House Bill 2221 is not actually ready to be worked today for a variety of reasons, so we're going to carry that over.
Oh.
Probably because of you. What are you talking about?
No, it's not exclusively because of Representative Gilliam's concerns. We're going to do House Bill 2763 at the end, so I just want to have some time to discuss the amendments. The House Bill 3437, we're not going to be hearing at the sponsor's request. And we are going to hear in order then House Bill 2800, 2924, 3296, and then we'll do our work sessions. Any questions for anybody? Does it seem like a reasonable plan? Representative Schaffler definitely agrees. Okay. So.
Send this down there.
So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2800. And much to my chagrin, I'm going to release the gavel and go over in front of the committee with Representative Kotek.
Uh-oh.
We go learn something.
What do we open on?
What? You want to sit down there? You want me to hold the gavel?
I thought you'd move.
Okay, all right.
I'll take that. Who he is. I don't think I'd be mistaken there.
Yes. Well, do you want to start to use your backup? Welcome, Representative Kotek and Representative Clem.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. It's very nice to be before you again this morning to speak in support of a bill that many of us love and are happy to be talking about this morning, House Bill 2800, which is the next step in expanding our farm-to-school and school-garden efforts here in the state of Oregon. Representative Clem and I have been working on this for a while, and you have a copy of a Dash 1 engrossed, or should have a copy of the Dash 1 engrossed, and we will talk about those. But in brief, just a little history. As you recall, in the 2007 session, we were able to establish a position in the Department of Agriculture to work with farmers to help have better connections with schools so they can purchase locally grown and processed and packaged foods. And in the 2008 special session, we were able to obtain a position in the Department of Education to also be that liaison between schools and farmers to promote locally grown produce and packaged foods and all kinds of good things in our schools. And now we are back in front of you because, as many of you recall, Oregon is one of the only states in the country that doesn't support its schools in terms of purchasing meals for their breakfast and lunch programs. In Oregon, we rely almost solely on the national federal reimbursements. And we see this as an opportunity to say, well, we should change that to begin with. But if we're going to change it, how do we want to incentivize what schools do with the dollars that the state could possibly give them to purchase healthier food? And what you have in front of you today is a proposal to say, let's spend an additional 15 cents per meal for lunch or 7 cents per meal for breakfast to buy locally grown, produced, packaged, processed food products from Oregon, because not only is that good for our farmers and our food industry here in the state, but it's good for our schools. And so that's what you see before you today. We're proposing accessing lottery dollars because we really truly believe this is an economic development issue. The funding in the Dash 1s you would see, instead of going to the Department of Agriculture with a pass-through to Department of Ed, we will propose a change to that, having those dollars go to the Oregon Economic Community Development Department as a pass-through to the Department of Ed. And the fiscal, as you see, we have a $22 million fiscal, but We really believe this is very important economic development and support for our local agriculture, local food processors, and the extra incentive of doing the right thing for our schools in terms of being able to buy healthier and more nutritious food. And we have a host of folks who want to talk today, but I just want to say in closing that in Oregon, we serve 55 million school lunches and 22 million school breakfasts under the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program. We have a huge opportunity here with this investment to leverage those dollars with a little bit of state funds to do really good things for our schools and our local agriculture. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, state representative from District 21 here in Central and East Salem. And before I start, I just wanted to note, Representative Gillum, I have these farm-to-school socks, and I wore them today, and they've got lucky clovers on them.
Very nice. These
are so
nice
socks. If you would, these bills have passed each time I've worn my farm-to-school socks.
I see.
So,
thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to talk really much because you're going to get a presentation that I believe will blow your socks off. And basically, this is about Oregon farmers feeding Oregon's children and how can government, since government really can't create jobs or rarely can it create jobs without having some access, some other source of that job creation. So when the taxes are paid by Oregonians, that's where the job creation came from originally. Somebody, some entrepreneur, some farmer, some forest property owner created jobs. And then as those taxes flow in here, can we support those same industries with these tax dollars? So I've just, in general, been interested in the purchasing power of government being used to support Oregon industry and our economy. And so that would be just my basic frame, and obviously I'll get to talk later if you'll give me the gavel back. So I'm going to stop at this point and let the proceedings commence.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Roebling?
Thank you very much. Now, since we are making a nexus to economic development, and so we are going to need to that, the $22 million that we proposal to go to that, do we know how many jobs that will either sustain, keep in our, you know, or create?
You'll have a very detailed explanation with proof and numbers and charts and actual pilot projects and things coming if we could let the experts handle that one.
I absolutely appreciate you guys deferring to people who know.
Well, we've been very lucky in that. We've had some philanthropic partners who have funded a demonstration project that we're currently getting initial information from that would directly show how these dollars would impact the economy and the multiplier effect. It's pretty impressive that we'll be able to bring that. So it's an excellent question. So
and I think it's 994. It's 994 biennium. Each biennium, 994 new jobs.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I've been here four sessions, and I'm grateful to say I'm not on the education committees or the healthcare committees, to be quite frank, but I've spent a lot of time trying to support our agricultural committee, our agricultural economy in this state. And as much as we have the OECD budget and the Ways and Means sub on it, Transportation Economic Development, and we're always talking about the new economy, and I'm all for the new economy. But the new economy, no matter where you are in this world, rests on the old economy. The old economy is never going away. Wood, food, energy. We spend a lot of money incenting people and businesses to stay or invest in this state. Well, this is exactly what that department was set up to do, and I support that. But that's exactly what this bill does as well. And I can't imagine anything better than to help the people whose kids are in our schools, feed the kids that are in our schools. My question, though, is it never sunk into my brain that we didn't spend any money on school lunches in this state. And I don't know if any experts are out there or if you all know how many states don't spend money on lunches and just count on the federal government.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I believe there's only one or two other states. It's a very small number. And That's why I think not only should we move up and say we want to support our school lunch programs, but do it in a very strategic way. Right. And if I could just, I could see how maybe this, we all know what the situation here is with the budget. This is a pretty impressive fiscal if you look at it. However, at the end of the day, at minimum, I hope we can pass something to get the mechanisms in place at whatever level we can possibly do, because who knows if we're going to get additional stimulus dollars that we could put directly into this for economic development. This is setting up a mechanism that will be ready in case we do have additional dollars. I would like to see us spend some money in the next biennium for this, because I do think there's a win-win for everybody involved. But more importantly, having something making us ready for if some additional dollars come down that could be spent on this regard, we'd be ready to go, which I think is key.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you.
If I could just actually could respond to that last part, sorry. There's, I think, four. I got a nod, but that's part of the presentation too. That's why I really would like to get to the presentation, but I don't have the gavel. If you,
we like having you there.
It's a control issue.
So you took care of so many bills early that we've got plenty of time. So just, you know, relax.
And I don't think Gilliam has any socks on.
We are in a democracy, Representative Rowland.
Thank you. The only other question I have is that I really love this bill and the idea that we're going to be buying Oregon produce and stuff with it. The question is, how do we get past those issues that bind us all the time with any other contracts about buying Oregon only?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I've consulted with the Attorney General. As long as we are the purchaser of goods and services with tax dollars, we have the right to set the terms of the contract without interfering with the Interstate Commerce Clause. The one other piece I should have mentioned is, for me, I'm shooting for the whole amount, this biennium, the entire $22.7 million. And I will set this program, as Representative Schaaf did, against any program we have, anything in the economic development world, any tax breaks, any tax incentives, any tax expenditures, because these farmers literally and physically can't nor would they outsource their acreage to some other country. So I will put it up against anything, full amount, this biennium.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a number of reasons why I want to keep you there as long as possible. Among them is your passion for the bill, and then also we enjoy it more when she's the chair. Do we have educators, superintendents, or people from districts? Because we want to talk good. And I know you've talked to them. I wanted to make sure they were here today. And I guess one follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm curious now on the socks. Are they laundered between lucky wares?
So thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam. What I should have done was actually wore what my mother-in-law sent me out the door with. She's staying with us. She sewed a button on for me last night, and this morning she made me a little sandwich, and she put me in an apron over top of my suit, and she just insisted on tying it in the back. I had a hard time getting it off in the car, and it had some peppers, red peppers on it. She laundered the socks, and I was going to wear my farm-to-school apron that apparently I've been assigned for the day by Azusa Suzuki, but I got it off, luckily, with the assistance of someone down in the parking garage.
Madam Chair, he's losing it. We got to get him.
Yes. So, thank you very much. Are there any further questions?
I've got one here.
There's just one last one. He asked about the other people. Are there any kids here who have been in this pilot project that have been eating this good food?
Okay.
Some parents.
Very good. That's good.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for letting me go.
Well, thank you for the gavel, I think. And while they're coming forward, I would like to say that one of the issues, having been a Head Start director and feeding children, is hunger. At all ages.
Yep. And this will help that as well.
So I have to look at my farm-to-school divas. Do you think this is in the correct order? Or do we know? Okay, Deb Lipple, let's have you start. And this is an interesting dance. So please, and you'll walk through who the next people are for us, and I'll just listen to what you want me to do.
Okay.
Thank
That's
you.
That's fabulous. Thank you, Chair Clem and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. My name is Deborah Lipholt, and I am Director of Growing Gardens, which is a Portland nonprofit that sows the seeds of health and good nutrition by supporting low-income families and children in schools to grow great food and learn to enjoy the wonders and the pleasures of that. Today I have the privilege of representing the Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Network. That's a coalition of over 100 local organizations, statewide organizations, nonprofits, businesses, representing hundreds of thousands of Oregonians. And we all have interests in agriculture, health, the environment, economic development, and anti-hunger work. This morning we're here to talk about HB 2800, a bill, as you've heard from Representative Kotek and Representative Klem, that's designed with two main purposes. A, to invest state resources in school food so that we can bring more Oregon-grown, processed, and manufactured products into lunchrooms across the state, and B, provide grant funds for food, agriculture, and garden-based education. Throughout the course of our testimony, you'll hear the phrase farm to school. Quite simply, farm to school programs are designed to bring more locally grown products into school cafeterias and create lifelong healthy eaters by giving kids a much better sense of where their food comes from through hands-on activities such as school gardens, farm field trips, and eating great food in the cafeteria. We know that it's important to do both. It's important to make changes in the cafeteria, and it's important to include those educational activities to ensure that children will make those choices once they're offered. Farm to school and school garden programs just make sense. They're a win for Oregon's children, they're a win for Oregon's agriculture, and they're a win for the whole Oregon economy. Indeed, farm to school and school garden programs have been proven to increase markets across the food sector, increase economic development, decrease transportation-related environmental impacts, increase school meal participation, as well as increase children's consumption of fruits and vegetables grown in the garden and then offered in the cafeteria. Also improves children and communities' knowledge about and attitudes toward and behaviors around eating local food, learning about nutrition and agriculture, and the environment. Therefore, it creates opportunities to improve childhood nutrition, reduce hunger, and turn around the alarming increases in obesity rates and obesity-related diseases. Our testimony today concerns two of Oregon's most precious resources, our children and our food system. HB 2800 invests in both, but to understand the investment represented by the bill, it's perhaps first necessary to have a basic understanding of the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program. It was created in the 1940s by the federal government as a way to ensure that American youth were receiving adequate nutrition and were ready to learn. As was mentioned, in Oregon, we serve 55 million lunches and 22 million breakfasts each year, and that represents about $70 million of the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program money that's being spent on food. The Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Network believes we could retain a greater piece of that school food pie here in Oregon. We could be buying more Oregon-grown, processed, and manufactured products for the lunchroom, and in the process, we'd cultivate in our young children a sense of their state's rich agricultural heritage. Why in the world wouldn't we want to do such a thing? In the last 5 to 10 years, farm-to-school and school garden programs have been sprouting up across the United States. In 2007, the Oregon legislature made the first installment on our own investment by considering farm-to-school and school garden legislation as introduced by Representative Klem and Representative Kotek, as you've heard. The end result was the establishment of the Oregon Department of Agriculture farm-to-school coordinator position. Then, during the 2008 supplemental session, legislators unanimously passed HB 3601A and established the Oregon Department of Education's Child and Nutrition Program's first farm-to-school and school gardens manager. With this legislation, Oregon became a leader in the nation, becoming the first ever to create parallel positions in both of those departments. While acknowledging and celebrating our investment and leadership so far, I'm here today to underscore the significant challenges and yet opportunities still before us. We still fall behind in one significant area. While other states invest state resources to supplement the purchasing power of schools through the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program, Oregon provides no resources beyond the federally required minimum. To give you a sense of where that puts us, in contrast to other states, California and Pennsylvania contribute an additional 13 cents per meal, Massachusetts 6 cents, my home state of Indiana, 7 cents, Wisconsin, 5 cents, Oregon, 0 cents. So indeed, we have our work cut out for us. We hear repeatedly and consistently that the lack of adequate funding is the number one barrier to school participation in farm-to-school efforts. The issue is money. Having already invested in the two positions at ODE and ODA, we now need to finish the job. The imperative for Oregon to fund school meal programs is also an imperative to increase markets for Oregon agriculture. And as you will soon hear, we project that this investment will ripple across many segments of Oregon's economy. During the next 50 minutes, you'll hear a variety of voices: school food service directors, farmer, food processor, school garden educators, a parent, an obesity researcher, an anti-hunger advocate, and an economist and an analyst that will describe the confirmed economic development successes of the type of farm-to-school investment that is called for in HB 2800. At the end of our testimony, I believe that you will recognize HB 2800 as legislation that is shovel-ready and fork-ready. If you move HB 2800 forward, I'm confident that you will find the state's investment will return multiple benefits and sustain two of Oregon's most important assets, our children and our agricultural economy. I strongly urge you to support HB 2800, and thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you. I think we're just going to actually go through the whole presentation,
okay,
and then we'll have
great
questions. So, next.
So the next is going to be Susan Barker from Beaverton School District.
And Jim Rowan.
And Jim Rowan from Astoria.
You do have them in order on my sign-up sheet. Cool. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Good.
Good morning, Chairman Clem and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Susan Barker, and I'm the administrator for the Nutrition Services Department for Beaverton School District and also a member of the district's Sustainability Committee. As you probably know, the Beaverton School District is in Washington County, and we have about 37,000 students in 49 sites, with about 35% of those students being low income. We serve 17,000 lunches a day and about 4,000 breakfasts a day. Since October, we've been able to serve fresh fruits and vegetables locally grown as a snack to students at our Five Oaks Middle School. It's a low-income school. And those students have really appreciated the opportunity to have access to locally grown fruits and vegetables that their families wouldn't have been able to afford. And I have some comments here about it. Teachers have made comments, too, that the kids are very excited about it. I think it's awesome that you guys are working with local farmers. The fruit has been great for my class. We are really excited to be able to provide the fruits and vegetables for these students at Five Oaks, but we're only able to provide that because we have a special grant from USDA, and it's for only this one school. We would love to be able to provide this for all the students at BSD, but we can't because of lack of funding. We'd also like to work to continue working with our local businesses. We work with two local businesses right now, one who makes our pizza and another who makes a breakfast bar that uses Oregon berries. And frankly, their businesses have flourished since we've partnered with them. And we'd love to be able to work with more Oregon businesses, but so far their prices have not enabled us to do that. If HB 2800 were passed, we could provide locally grown fruits and vegetables like lovely fresh Pharrell pears and some nice asparagus that we have for Five Oaks students, but do that for all the students at BSD. And we could provide them with tastier and fresher locally made entrees made to our specs. And what's truly exciting is that we could do this while we are helping our neighbors and our farmers at the same time. So, one of our school board members, Karen Cunningham, wanted me to convey her interest in this bill today. She wasn't able to come and testify, but she is very supportive of it. So, thank you very much for your listening and for the opportunity to testify.
Yeah. Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Rowan. I'm from the Astoria School District and Chartwell Schools Division. Astoria is a rural school district of five schools, an enrollment of only 1,916 children, and we serve approximately 22,000 meals per month. I'm a contractor for Astoria School District. I work for Chartwell Schools, a division of Compass Group, USA, one of the largest food service providers in the world. Chartwell's, Astoria School District, myself, many of the employees, including our superintendent, principals, are all endorsers of this bill. We stand behind it 100% and believe in it. House Bill 2800 will provide schools with the monies necessary to provide Oregon-grown, produced, packaged foods. It allows us access to grants to develop gardens, grow fruits, vegetables, and young minds. This is a very important piece of legislation for our schools and our students and our state. Astoria is located on the very northwest coast of our state. We don't have an opportunity for very much in the way of growers, producers, or packagers. There's a great distance that has to be covered to get things to us. The food service department in our district is self-sufficient. We work purely on a profit and loss basis and are only funded by the sales within our cafeteria and that our food service can provide to our students and our staff. We struggle daily with the choice of heat and serve or being able to scratch make and give our kids homemade tasting food, homemade quality food on a daily basis. Then again, we come up to the point of when we have to build our menus for the following month, we have to look at how do we source our food? Are we going to focus on local or are we going to focus on easy? I've chosen to focus on local and in-state as much as I can, and because of my proximity, regional. All of these pieces come back together. With the funding listed in House Bill 2800, we would be provided the income to continue and possibly expand our scratch cooking program from only two or three times a month to at least once a week and quite possibly more often. Additional funding would also provide the opportunity to bring more Oregon-grown, packaged, and produced foods into our schools and to serve a more bountiful selection to our children. The second part of the bill, school gardens, is one of the missing links in today's education process in my mind. Gardens give the ability to link many core curriculum classes in a way no other one subject can do. We have land, we have committed citizens, committed staff. We're missing one major piece, more funding. The grants in House Bill 2800 provide this to us and allow us the ability to create our outside classrooms, our school gardens, nature and foraging trails, to teach our children the importance of being able to provide for yourself and your family. The bill would assist us in reintroducing our children to the beauty of a garden and fresh vegetables. House Bill 2800 provides our schools with the monies necessary to provide Oregon grown, produced, and packaged food. It allows us access to grant funds to develop gardens, grow fruits, vegetables, and young minds. This is a very important piece of legislation for us. Please join us by supporting the passage of this bill. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before you today. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Rosenbland, Peter Truitt.
Thank you. Chairman Clem, members of the committee. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Peter Truitt, and along with my brother David, we operate Truitt Brothers here in Salem. We're a food processor. We produce shelf-stable products in five packaging formats distributed nationwide under our brand and under our customers' brands, both consumer and food service. We package and can seasonal products sourced in Oregon and nearby from July to November, and we produce meals and meal components year-round in two production facilities here in Salem. We employ about 650 people year-round in Salem, additionally up to 600 seasonally during our summer and fall packs. We began working with Portland Public Schools during the 07-08 school year. Portland Public School has been using our products in two of their special promotions, which they call their Harvest of the Month and Local Lunches promotions. I'm sure you'll hear more about these promotions in subsequent testimony. Suffice to say, over the last year and a half, they have featured pears sourced from Hood River, bootleg beans grown in the Willamette Valley, cherries grown in the Dalles, and three-bean chili produced in West Salem. The three-bean chili is prepared with a reduced amount of sodium and a mild version of spices so that the product is versatile and suitable for child nutrition guidelines. Working with just Portland Public School and the Jervis School District, the volumes used have added a little over half a shift to our special products department and over 6 hours to our seasonal canning operations. Moreover, perhaps more importantly, the volume in our seasonal canning added 10 tons of Willamette Valley green beans, that equates to about 2 acres, and 96 tons of Columbia Basin pears. It's heartening for me to know that in our case, Oregon children are consuming the finest beans, pears, chili, and cherries on earth. I might add parenthetically, we make a darn good chili. We sell, a lot of our chili to Texas Stadium, where the Dallas Cowboys play. Most poor people think that chili comes from Houston, but it comes from right here.
New York City.
For years, we've been shipping these wonderful products to school children in many places a long ways from Oregon. It's worth noting at this point that up till recently, school food service has been a market that we as a company had ceased to develop because of insurmountable bureaucracy and regulations that actually worked against the simple principle of getting good food to children. I believe the state of Oregon was very smart to staff positions within state government to facilitate this broad Oregon Farm to School initiative. Really, that changed it all for me. It's also worth noting that last week, a very large group of school cafeteria people from across the U.S. gathered in Portland to study the models in place out here. Oregon has become a great example for many others. We hosted a group of these people in Salem to illustrate how a processor fits into the system. They were served a lunch composed of products that are a part of the Harvest of the Month program at Portland Public School. And let me tell you, they cleaned their plates because, as you know and as I've said, Oregon products are some of the best in the world. A very important reason HB 2800 should get a hard look is that this bill is meant to favor not only fresh produce from Oregon producers, but all products processed in Oregon. Among the several important industries in Oregon, the Oregon Employment Department recently reported that the food processing industry is the only manufacturing sector in Oregon to show positive growth in employment in the last 12 months. 1,000 jobs in the last 12 months, and the data is attached to the written testimony that I submitted. I don't need to tell you that now is a time to be looking for ways to increase employment, but what you may not realize is how significantly the Oregon agribusiness sector contributes to job growth in the state. Our industry is a vigorous industry, employing about, well, more than 18,000 people statewide, energized by progressive policies that favor innovation and productivity. State government has made good investments in this industry, and recent job growth is the payoff, especially at a time like this. Our company has benefited by being a part of this of these pilot projects in an expanded program will certainly benefit the broader food processing industry in Oregon. In a time of uncertainty, this is about the closest you can get to a sure bet. Needless to say, on behalf of our company and on behalf of the food processing industry in Oregon, I strongly support HB 2800. Thank you for your attention.
Good morning, Chairman Clem and members of the committee. I'm Jeff Rosenblatt. I'm an owner-operator of Happy Harvest Farms. It's a small farm here in the Willamette Valley. We just farm about 25 acres, but we have a large variety of crops, about 9 varieties of berries, Marion's strawberries, blueberries, and we farm about 30 varieties of vegetables. We started our farm operation geared primarily towards farmers markets, so we have a lot of experience in fresh produce, getting it picked at the right time and delivering it at the right time. And Katrina Weiss, the director in Bend School District, she's the manager at the Bend Farmers Market, and she first approached me about 3 or 4 years ago, said she was starting a pilot program for farm to school. So we started talking and started working together with her, and over the last few years we've provided products to her from blueberries, strawberries, fresh cantaloupe, watermelon, broccoli, peppers, tomatoes, just an enormous amount of fresh vegetables. And it's taken off quite well there. She's my biggest customer right now. I also have worked with Claire at the Jervis School District this year, which is a lot closer to drive. But in addition to the schools, the school business has really helped stabilize our farm business. It's increased the amount of work I have for employees. It helps in between the farmers markets get rid of excess produce that we have and decrease the waste. We actually currently talk to the members of the different districts we work with and plan our plantings around them. Like they said, they have the harvest of the month, which is kind of a different vegetable throughout the year. And in the Bend district, they're just happy to get whatever they can because they're so far away from a lot of fresh produce. I see this House Bill 2800 as a very positive thing for farmers in the local area, especially some of us small farmers that do the fresh produce. It will allow us to increase sales, employ people longer, help us to add some equipment to get the produce to a state that can be served to the students with less effort on behalf of the school cafeterias, which I understand don't have the staff and equipment to process a lot of these vegetables. So I look forward to future business with the schools and strongly support House Bill 2800. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. Is that Gail Ling?
Yeah, Gail.
And Kathy Berry.
Chair Clem and members of the Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities House Committee. My name is Gail Angelotto, and I'm the statewide coordinator of the OSU Extension Master Gardener Program. I'm here today to discuss how the school garden component of House Bill 2800 is important to promoting healthy food choices in young children. Specifically, studies have shown that children who participate in school garden activities are more willing to taste vegetables, are more knowledgeable about nutrition, increase their fruit and vegetable consumption, and tend to prefer fruits and vegetables more than children who don't have the opportunity to learn by gardening. What we have seen in our own work in school gardens right here in Oregon supports what is reported in the scholarly literature. Some of the children that Master Gardeners and others work with in school gardens come from families who grow their own food. Many do not. As the children begin to work in the garden, it's not uncommon to hear, "I wouldn't eat anything that doesn't come from a grocery store." However, the children are both surprised and excited to discover that this is exactly how their food supply begins. Better yet, when the children learn that they're going to be eating food that they themselves will grow, the smiles, the lip smacking, and the pretend nibbling are undeniable endorsements. Growing your own food is good. At Yukina View Elementary School, first and second graders plant seeds in the classroom in April, transfer their seedlings to the Yukina Bay Lighthouse Garden in late May, and harvest the food to take to the local food share in September. Each fall, master gardeners teach a nutrition class where the children get to see, feel, smell, and taste the harvested vegetables and herbs. Who would have guessed that beets and beet greens had been ranked as favorites of first and second graders? Carrots, peas, beans, pumpkin, and sunflower seeds also ranked high on their list. Nasturtiums, on the other hand, did not get the thumbs up. They were too peppery. The children love the hands-on process of growing food. From the beginning, the children know that they're growing food to help others. This may be one of their first community service lessons. In September, as the children were harvesting and packaging their produce, one student said that he would like to keep what he had helped to grow, but that he also understood that others in the community were hungry and that this food would help them. May I remind you that these incredibly thoughtful and compassionate words were spoken by a second grader. Another child was so excited to show off his garden and his gardening skills that he called his grandfather, 130 miles away in Portland, and excitedly told him that he had to come down for the garden harvest. A proud grandfather beamed and took pictures as his grandson picked the vegetables and herbs that he had helped to grow. With the help of a greenhouse, fifth graders at the elementary school propagated vegetables, which were then sold at the Newport Farmers Market. The funds raised went towards a field trip to the Fruit Loop in Hood River, once again reinforcing the fact that a healthy and vibrant local food system is important to healthy kids and to healthy communities. The fifth graders were able to develop their gardening and their entrepreneurial skills, as well as to expand their appreciation of food production. Although the examples I provided today are from an elementary school in Lincoln County, we have seen similar positive results in many schools across the state. In programs supported by Master Gardener volunteers, children as young as 3 years old have been introduced to gardening. From preschool to fifth grade, the results are undeniable. Working in the garden and growing their own food ignites children's excitement about and acceptance of a diverse array of vegetables and fruit in their diet. It is at this young age that patterns of healthy eating are often established. As an employee of the state, I'm not able to explicitly endorse House Bill 2800, but I hope that the examples and testimony that I provided speak to the importance of school gardens and the school garden component of House Bill 2800 to healthy kids and to healthy communities. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Clem and committee members. My name is Kathleen Berry, and I live at 520 Northeast 185th Place in Portland, Oregon. I'm an educator and a parent of two great children. Both of my children participate in the free and reduced meal program. And if not for such meal programs, I wouldn't be able to provide the same nutritious meal on a daily basis for each of my two children based on the cost of food today. I believe having school meals supplemented by Oregon farmers will help our economy and cut the cost of having vendors provide foods that are being transported from non-local resources. My children choose food differently since participating in school garden education programs. Having learned about food is grown and how they've grown it themselves. They have made healthier choices due to their gardening experiences. My partnership with Growing Gardens to have a home garden and then adding a community garden plot has grown into a world of opportunities for me. The experiences and knowledge from having a garden has connected me to the community in more ways than I can express. I now enjoy teaching a garden class. I get to pass on my learned opportunities and share the same enthusiasm with the children I teach. So I strongly support the House Bill 2800. Thank you for the opportunity of speaking today.
Thank you very much. Adriana Voss and Patty Whitney Wise.
But during school, you can't just get more signs.
Good morning. Honorable Chair Clem, Committee. My name is Dr. Adriana Vasandre, and I am representing the Center for Study of Weight Regulation at Oregon Health Sciences University, which is endorsing House Bill 2800. I also serve as a legislative appointee on the Obesity Prevention Task Force created by Senate Bill 931, which, along with the Diabetes Task Force, has included farm-to-school and school gardens in their policy recommendations to this legislature. I'd like to briefly update you on the latest obesity numbers for Oregon. 3 out of 5 Oregon adults are now overweight or obese. Just this past decade, the number of Oregon adults who are obese increased by 70%, and the rise is equally alarming in children. The number 1, 2, and 3 leading causes of death in the United States, heart disease, cancer, and stroke, are all diseases directly linked to an unhealthy diet and obesity. Obesity is responsible for over a quarter of the increases in the rise in health care costs over the past 20 years and is costing Oregon alone close to $1.6 billion per biennium in direct medical costs. Because of the obesity epidemic, Oregonians are at disturbingly high risk for chronic diseases, and there's only one way to turn this around: by eating healthier, lower calorie foods and moving more. We all know that fresh fruits and vegetables are the most nutritious foods, and research very clearly shows that they are key to significantly reducing the risk for chronic diseases. But less than a quarter of us actually eat the daily quantity recommended by the Center for Disease Control, and that's because of eating patterns that are set up in childhood. So how do we change these patterns? Well, research shows that farm-to-school and school gardens programs can double the amount of fruits and vegetables kids eat at school and help boost consumption at home. And it doesn't end there. Farm-to-school and school garden programs have also improved students' willingness to eat vegetables as a snack and the likelihood that children educate their parents to buy and prepare vegetables. These kind of eating changes are tremendous, especially when you consider that almost half of school meals go to children participating in the USDA's free and reduced program who are at the highest risk for obesity and chronic diseases. Although I don't have the time in this testimony to elaborate, it's at least important to note that there's a strong connection between the nature of our food system and the obesity epidemic, and that our centralized food system is unsustainable in terms of the environment, energy use, food security, and our health. House Bill 2800 takes a step in the right direction by investing in a more sustainable, diversified, local food economy. The farm-to-school and school garden program has the promising potential to engage and connect Oregon's children and parents to the food on their plate, increase consumption of fresh local fruits and vegetables, decrease their risk for chronic disease, and ultimately reduce the burden of the rapidly rising health care costs on our state. I realize that our current budget crisis calls for very tough decisions, but I urge you to take into account the potential long-term savings and the potential short-term returns to the Oregon economy. The fact that this bill addresses so many of the greatest challenges we face today makes it clear why House Bill 2800 is so important, and now is the time to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee members. I'm Patty Whitney Wise with the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to support House Bill 2800. As was mentioned, close to half of our children here in Oregon do receive free and reduced price meals within the school system, and that number is going up as our economy has been going south. So I'm guessing it's over 50% at this point, given all of the layoffs recently here in Oregon. For some of these children, the school meals program is their primary and possibly only source of nutrition during the day. So making those meals as healthy as possible is really important. Families are really struggling to put food on the table, and we know that children learn better, have fewer learning and health problems if they eat properly. We also are very supportive of the link to Oregon farmers. Many of them, especially the smaller ones, struggle themselves to put food on the table, ironically, as their incomes have gone down. So we really see this as a win-win for many, many people, including our children here in Oregon, and we fully support this legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, how are you doing?
We have one more panel, then I was going to let people ask of any of this group. And bring people back up as needed. I think we have one person not associated with the panel that then I'll take their testimony after you question the really big roving panel that's been here so far. Deborah Kane and Sarah Cruz.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, my name is Deborah Kane. I'm the Vice President of Food and Farms at EcoTrust, a W.K. Kellogg Foundation Food and Society Policy Fellow, the publisher of Edible Portland magazine, and the mom of two young children in public schools. Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm thrilled to be here. We are your last panel, so we're going to do a little bit of cleanup, and we're also going to focus very specifically on the economic impact of House Bill 2800. So in the cleanup category this morning, you have heard that schools in Oregon who participate in the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program spend approximately $70 million of federal funds on school food each year, each school year. You've been reminded that 46% of the students in Oregon who eat school meals come from families who are so economically challenged their children qualify for free or reduced price meal programs. You know that the state has already endorsed the concept of getting Oregon-grown products into our schools by placing full-time positions in both our Oregon Department of Education and our Oregon Department of Agriculture. And you may have noticed that we live in a society where children are much more likely to recognize corporate logos than carrot tops growing out of the garden. But you've heard today that garden-based educational opportunities could change that. I'd like to tell you very specifically about a pilot project that's taking place in two school districts in the state of Oregon. And then my colleague, Dr. Cruzy, will walk you through some of the analysis that we did specifically related to House Bill 2800. So first, the pilot project. In late 2007, my organization, EcoTrust, received a grant from the Kaiser Permanente Community Fund at the Northwest Health Foundation to test the policy concepts inherent in House Bill 2800. Much like the per meal reimbursement that is embedded in House Bill 2800, we used grant money to invest 7 cents per lunch served in two school districts, Jervis Public Schools and Portland Public Schools. So we had a very small rural school district, Jervis, and then the state's largest urban, very metropolitan school district. All told, we worked with 91 schools who served 22,000 lunches a day. On the ground, the school seized on the opportunity to do three different things or to create special programs, and you've heard a little bit about those programs already. The schools either used the money for something called Harvest of the Month, wherein they brought in fresh fruits and vegetables or canned or frozen fruits and vegetables into the meal program on a weekly or biweekly or monthly basis, or in the case of Portland, funds were used to focus on the entire meal and bring in a wholly local lunch, everything but the condiments, actually. And then the third way that schools used the meal reimbursement was to just generally, not through a special promotion, but just generally increase their purchases of the local products. And so I want to talk to you about the results that we found after 14 weeks of that program. I'm going to share data with you from the time period September 15th, more or less, when school started this year, through December 31st, 2008. So during that 14-week time period, we invested approximately $66,000 into those two schools based on that 7 cent per meal reimbursement calculation. And we found that by investing that initial $66,000 in the school, we actually inspired total local purchases of just over $225,000. So what did the schools buy? I've provided a spreadsheet in my testimony, attachment one, that gives you a sense of how those funds were used in those first 14 weeks of the program. The list is by no means comprehensive, but it gives you a glimpse. And I'd ask, if you would, that you focus your attention specifically on the month of September. And imagine being a child just coming off a summer of television and popsicles. Waiting for you at school are farm fresh peaches, tomatoes, cantaloupe, broccoli, cauliflower, plums, apples, watermelon, and cucumber. What a nightmare. No. As you can see, the bounty continues well into October. Could you imagine? We made it easy for you to imagine by providing a collage to give you a sense. Attachment 2. As stated earlier and as clearly shown here, farm-to-school programs are known to increase the types and varieties of fruits and vegetables consumed by children who desperately need to be eating exactly these kinds of products. I'd also like to draw your attention to the local lunches that were served in Portland Public Schools in the month of November, which would be in attachment 1. I had the opportunity to eat that local lunch, which consisted of baked chicken with a pear glaze, roasted parsnips, roasted carrots, canned green beans, fresh pears, fresh apples. I ate that meal with my second grade daughter, Zoe. And as I sat at the lunchroom and listened to the conversation take place with her little classmates, I was really struck by how struck the children were to discover that chicken had a bone. So used to chicken-like product that had been pulped, extruded, breaded, and then fried into chicken nuggets.
Making him hungry.
Have to break for snack.
Everybody's stomach's growling.
Is it the photos that have been provided? Farm-to-school programs help give children a sense of what food actually is. And I guarantee you that knowing the difference between food and food-like products is a life skill well worth knowing. As you can see, when given just a few extra pennies, 7 cents, a few extra pennies per meal, the schools bought a wide variety of products, both fresh, frozen, and canned fruits and vegetables. They also bought Oregon wheat. They bought Oregon cheese. They brought in Oregon chicken noodle soup, as just a few examples. Also of note, the schools purchased their products in a wide variety of ways. They bought them direct from farmers, direct from food processors, but they also work through their mainline distributors. Beyond the procurement impacts, there are other intangibles worth noting. I've included a few other attachments, one being comments from the lunchroom personnel, the impact it had on them, on their job satisfaction, and in how the students received and felt about themselves and the meals. I've also included an attachment that gives you a sense of how the community writ large responds when we make changes in the lunchroom. You'll see that many grocery stores in the Portland metropolitan area championed the changes taking place in the lunchroom by running specials. For example, when Portland Public Schools had parsnips in the cafeteria for Harvest of the Month, many area grocery stores were running parsnips at a discount to their customers because we wanted to reinforce the notion of healthy eating in many places, not just the cafeteria. So recall that we invested $66,000, or just over $66,000, and we witnessed schools purchase upwards of $225,000 in local products. That's a 241% return on investment. We received such a terrific return on investment because the school districts leveraged the money that we had given them to substitute locally produced items for items they had otherwise been buying out of state. And I think that this finding related to what we call inspired purchases is particularly relevant to House Bill 2800. And Dr. Cruzzi is going to walk you through the inspired purchases in a sec here. But I do want to give you a really tangible and very specific example of how the inspired purchases work, and that would be in Attachment 5. And Peter Truitt from Truitt Brothers referenced his fantastic, phenomenal, delicious three-bean chili earlier. And Portland Public Schools actually created an all-local lunch centered around Peter's three-bean chili. And chili is a pretty kid-friendly product, kid-friendly meal that shows up on school menus all the time. But more often than not, when chili's on the menu in schools, the chili is actually coming from the USDA commodity program. So I'll simply draw your attention to the very bottom line on your attachment, number 5, and ask you to note that when we provide a per-meal reimbursement or when we prioritize local spending, we actually move, in many respects, all the money that otherwise would have been spent outside the state back into the state of Oregon, and we actually can trace the food that we're serving our kids to its point of origin, which in the days of peanut recalls is not a small feat and a point worth underscoring. So we had a 241% return on our initial investment, $225,000 more or less of economic activity. We ran some calculations and determined that that $225,000 of local product spending...
It's somebody else. Yeah,
somebody's. Mine, yours, I'm not sure.
It's not mine. I don't bring them.
This one.
Now that I have your attention, had an economic multiplier effect of 1.87, which suggests that for every dollar we spend on school food, we can expect another 87 cents to reverberate throughout the economy. Or put another way, that's actually another additional 87% return on investment. So we actually witnessed two returns. And I would just add, we were very much further encouraged to learn through our analysis that the resources used to buy school food actually end up affecting 401 of 409 economic sectors that we track in the Oregon economy, so that when we invest in school food, the money that we invest doesn't stay in the agricultural community, but in fact travels much more broadly. So I'm going to have my colleague, Dr. Cruzy, walk you through analysis that we did based on our findings from the pilot project to gather the data that we used to run our secondary analysis to give you a sense of how we think House Bill 2800 might impact the Oregon economy overall. We polled school food service directors probably about 3 weeks ago now in the middle of March and asked them, if House Bill 2800 passed, please give us a sense of in which categories of purchasing do you believe you would use those funds. And so, again, I'm going to have Dr. Cruzy walk you through the results of that analysis, which are found in your packets on Attachment 6.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Sarah Cruzy, and I'm the senior economist at EcoTrust in Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to provide testimony before you today. As Deborah said, in an effort to better understand how Oregon schools may use the proposed funding under House Bill 2800 and how that funding would in turn further benefit the overall Oregon economy, EcoTrust recently sent an online survey to over 300 school food service providers across the state. 83 individuals responded in just a short period, representing school districts of all types, rural, urban, large, and small. We specifically asked respondents, if you were given an additional 15 cents for every lunch served and 7 cents for every breakfast served in your school district for the specific purpose of buying Oregon products, what would you be most likely to purchase? Respondents said they're most likely to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables, cheese, fluid milk, butter, bread and bakery products, and poultry and eggs. In collaboration with colleagues at Oregon State University, we then used these survey results to inform our economic impact analysis. That is, how will the reimbursement, in turn, being spent locally by schools, benefit the overall Oregon economy? We analyzed 6 different scenarios to estimate economic benefits under a variety of potential spending behaviors. Half of these scenarios include a federal match, and half do not. This is because my understanding is that as currently written, House Bill 2800 requests a 15-cent reimbursement for lunch and a 7-cent reimbursement for breakfast. I also understand that there is an amendment under consideration that will require schools to prove that they had spent an equivalent amount of 15 or 7 cents using the funds available to them from the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program before becoming eligible for the state investment. Our scenarios depict a range of possible outcomes with and without the federal match that are informed by our experience under the pilot program Deborah just discussed, the results of our survey, and discussions with schools around the state. I have included the results of all 6 scenarios in my written testimony, Attachment 7, but will highlight just 2 of them here today. The first assumes that all schools participate and receive both a 15 and 7 cent reimbursement, and there is a federal matching requirement, but that they spend no more than what is received through the bill and required by the match. That is, there is no inspired spending. The second scenario assumes that there is a federal matching requirement and 100% inspired spending on the part of all participating schools. Remember that Deborah just said we saw a 241% inspired spending with the pilot program. We recognize, however, that schools will have the ability to decide how to best use this reimbursement in their districts, and therefore we can't expect that all schools will behave the same way. So we choose what is likely a more conservative approach, even for the best case scenario we consider here. Before I go into the results of the analyses, I want to take a moment to talk about this inspired spending. The economics term might be recognized more easily, incentivized. As Deborah already stated, the phrase really describes schools leveraging investment to substitute locally produced items for items they'd been buying non-locally. And I also want to be clear that while we recognize that House Bill 2800 spans the biennium, our results are for 1 year only, both to align with the school year and to appropriately measure job creation as annual full-time employment. Now let us consider the results of the 2 scenarios I've described already, both with a federal match, but one with no inspired spending and the other with 100% inspired spending. Under the first scenario, the funding from House Bill 2800 is approximately $9.8 million per year, and the required match doubles that amount, resulting in an estimated $19.6 million in direct local spending by schools annually. The results of our analysis estimate that the overall economic benefit to the Oregon economy under this scenario is almost $36 million, a multiplier of 1.83, with the creation of 318 new jobs. Under the second scenario, that $19.6 million catalyzes total spending of $29.4 million. This includes the 100% inspired spending, that in turn results in an estimated $53.8 million in positive impacts on the Oregon economy. In this scenario, we also estimate the creation of 477 full-time jobs measured on an annual basis. Results suggest that such increases would also provide positive returns to tax revenue, the details of which can be found in my written testimony. Also, as Deborah noted in her remarks when discussing the pilot program impacts, we have reason to believe that the money invested does not only benefit Oregon food-producing sectors, but again, travels to almost all sectors of the economy. Obviously, it's impossible to predict precisely how schools will use the state investment called for in House Bill 2800, or to what degree we will see an immediate catalytic effect. Nonetheless, our analysis shows that across all scenarios we've considered, the state can expect immediate benefits across multiple sectors of the Oregon economy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Great. Thank you very much. So we have one member of the public not affiliated with this large panel that just happened. So I think I'll take questions now for this panel, and then we'll have the final testimony. I first must acknowledge that I was off by 50 jobs when I was doing my math. I said 994. It's actually would be 954 over a biennium. The one thing I wanted to note, I was probably buzzing because of this. One of my alerts was that 300 new jobs were promoted or created or something by the legislature recently or by the state. We spent $14 million to create 300 new jobs within the last few days within the nursing sector. And if I have this right, on an annual basis, well, maybe you can help me, doctor. So on an annual basis, how, with the federal match, it's 477 jobs what's the investment?
9.8. That's with the estimated 53.8 million.
So that includes the 9 million. We invested 14 million of state dollars state and federal dollars to create 300 jobs in this other program. You're saying if we invested 9.7 million.
9.8, yes.
9.8 million, sorry. Then we would create 477 jobs in the agriculture industry feeding Oregon's children.
Chairman Clem, that is correct.
It's a deal.
Representative Roblin, we'll start with all the questions now. So let's just get into questions. Representative Roblin.
Thank you. That, not just the agricultural community. That 477 jobs is all? Because you said that it went across all sectors. So,
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, that is correct.
Okay. So, and that's in the best case scenario if we had 100% match and 100%. But even in the lowest case, with just our investment and nothing else, we're still creating 159 jobs. And that's with no match and no help as an incentive, which doesn't seem possible. So, I mean, in your moderate one where you're talking about the investment of both the state and the federal match, we're up to the 239 jobs per year. So in all cases, it creates all what I would consider reasonable cases, it creates more than that.
Would you just cover, maybe, Deborah, why the federal match is possible, that at one point it would have been unlawful, and now it's possible?
What is the federal match?
Representative Clement, members of the committee, so as I believe you've heard today, the federal funds that we're talking about come from the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program. And historically, there had been restrictions placed on how states could use those federal resources. But in the 2008 Farm Bill, advocates successfully lobbied the case that states should be allowed to create preferences for local products using National School Lunch and Breakfast Program funds. I should mention that there still remain some restrictions on which products we will be able to place our preference for local. It's not a carte blanche permission, but the restrictions have, in fact, been removed.
Schaffler.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, if you had enjoyed some good Oregon fruit this morning, your head would have been a little clearer. You could have done your math a little better. Anyway, forgive me.
My daughter wouldn't share her berries.
You know, our daughter is constantly snacking on berries and fruit and veggies, and last night she's crunching on these peas, and we don't deny her ice cream or chocolate. But she goes to public school, and she frequently comes home and just, I go, what did you do today? And she'll talk about how the lunch was inedible. So, and God bless our school district, but they're buying a lot of the stuff that that you're showing me here, and that's what they're providing. And but while Mr. Truitt was here, I wrote down here that using his data, we could have come to the conclusion that we'd actually make money. The state would be in the black if we implemented this policy. And I had some nice people in my office, and I looked at $22.5 million, and I said, look, it's about the money, and we don't have the money. And I think you have a great argument, and I think the OECD, this should be one of their projects. And I was wondering, too, the 400 jobs, those are 400 jobs regardless of how much they're making that would be out of this state rather than here. But I would like to wonder someday if you could do a breakdown of who's making what and who's doing what. Because if you can show that the average wage is above the county average wage as well, for the most part, that would be very beneficial to someone like me as well. But, and then there was one more thing I was going to
say. They would probably like it if you would round up, since it's 477. If you want to round up, you can call it 500, I'm sure.
Right, right. Anyway, I there was one more thing I was going to say, and I can't remember it. But I strongly, we are going to work this bill, right, Mr. Chair?
We don't have the fiscal back, so we're not going to be able to do it today with our friends here, but we are going to work it soon.
Mm-hmm.
We have the amendments back, and we can even talk about those. We just don't have the fiscal back, although it's pretty obvious what the fiscal
is. I was going to tell you what it could be. I was just going to get it.
It's a good move.
Okay. I know that we have one more person in the panel. Representative Van Orman has some testimony, I think, that she'd kind of like to give. Any more questions for anybody who's gone so far? Representative Wingard.
On this chart here, my calculation is that the meal that you serve, which is looks delicious, was a 75% increase in cost. Did I do my math right?
More or less. Chair Clem, Representative Wingard, yes.
I guess my other question would be for these folks here is why is it more expensive? I mean, I'm looking at your vendors here, and I'm wondering why they are so much more expensive than the other brand, which has to travel a lot further.
And would you like to bring Truett Brothers up to talk about
actually,
that?
No. Representative, that's an easy answer, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just thought. No, please.
You know, I don't think you have to have Truett. I mean, this is subsidized food that they're using that they buy from the federal surplus program, and you pay almost nothing for it. I mean, it is below market price. The people who the federal government have it from, I mean, they buy it at a very reduced price, and they sell it to schools at an exceedingly reduced price. So you can't compete against that warehouse if you look at prices.
Well, please.
Chair Clem, members
call
of the committee.
Call me Claire, too. Most people, for some reason, say Claire Chem, generally. So
did I say that?
Fine.
If I say that?
No, but most people do. So no. not a problem at all.
You know how I feel about calling you Representative Clem.
It's better than me calling Representative Scofflaw like I was the other day in transportation.
Scofflaw?
Yeah.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, Representative Roblin, A-plus to you. That was exactly the right answer, and I would draw your attention just to one example on that chart, and that would be the blueberries, for example, that come from the USDA Commodity Fruit Program at a penny a serving. Versus the blueberries that come from here, literally here, Willamette Valley Fruit Company based in Salem for 21 cents a serving. That is the first reason. The second reason that is worth underscoring in the case of this example that I show you is economies of scale, of course, because we're only serving this meal once in one school district versus the prices, the comparison prices, which are millions of meals. So, of course, one of the things that we'd like to see with House Bill 2800 is that this program not take place just at one school with one meal, but in every school across the state, in which case we will start to see that number come down because the volume of products that we're purchasing in-state will go up.
Representative, Mr. Chair, I remember what I was going to say. You know, I noticed Oregon Education Association, Oregon School Board Association, Oregon School Administrators are not on this list of supporters. Were they approached? And then you don't have to answer that, but if they're listening, I think you can do the math and show that we save money here. And if they don't support this, I would like to come before this committee and tell me why they don't support it. Because there's so many things in this committee that they should be here talking to us about, not least of which is a common school fund, but especially something of this magnitude that I think will be economically, environmentally, and socially beneficial to this state. And the children, we're doing our best to educate. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Chair Clem, members of the committee,
please, yeah.
I thank you for the invitation not to respond specifically to that. But I will respond generally by saying that I think it's an indication that the cafeteria is the most neglected classroom in the school and that, by and large, the cafeteria is not viewed as a classroom.
Hmm. Yeah, also I wanted to, as the note that I've been sitting on now for an hour and 20 minutes, don't forget to acknowledge the written testimony from the Portland Public Schools that they did not plan to testify. And I think part of the issue, I've had some fairly good debates with folks on the radio recently over this issue, and the part of the issue is, are we putting education advocates in an odd situation by trying to compare the school lunch to school days or other things, and should we maybe, as this bill does, compare it as an economic development investment versus other investments the state makes? And I think if they see the amendments and they see this is not challenging within a school district where the money comes from, we're trying to compare it to tax expenditures, programs of economic and community development, I think maybe they'd be willing to come in and answer your questions. Representative Gilliam, Roblin, then Schaffler?
That's fine. Yeah.
Finally. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to do this. I wish you'd called on me while Representative Krieger was out of the room, because we are testing his patience. He is on board, and we're going to lose him if I keep talking. So I'm going to try to be brief.
You used to have a sign, if you keep talking, I'm going to vote no.
Why wouldn't you?
I've done that. I may today. I may.
We won't call up for a work session then.
I am very excited about this. This is why my name is on the bill. And I, as long as my colleague from Happy Valley is calling people out, I challenge the governor to come in here and talk against it. And Lars Larson, too, as long as he's here, too.
I actually did go on his program about farm to school.
Well, if he's against it, have him come in here and tell us why.
Okay.
And my question or my comment is mainly for my friend from OHSU, the good doctor from OHSU, whose name I won't attempt. Cruise. And you can comment on this if you want, but a couple of years ago, a couple of your folks did a study. They got, I love this because it's to the bill. They got $7 or $8 million. I'm talking about Kerry Keel and his partner. Are you familiar with them? Up there on the hill, it's a big place. But
yeah.
And they got a grant from the federal government to come into Oregon and pick several schools and try to get at obesity and nutrition. And at the end of the study, two things that struck me were this. Federal government paying them a lot of money, that's fine. But the first was the most popular food item in Oregon schools at the schools that were chosen, and they were not random, they were a cross-section, was a corn dog. Mm. Yep. And I don't think we grow corn dogs. And the reason, you know, the kids, they get, there's an acquired taste to that, and they like it and all that. But it's the reason is they're a nickel apiece through a subsidized federal program.
Yes.
And yet the federal government was asking us, why are our kids so fat?
Mm.
Why do we have obesity? And it's just incredible to me that, you know, and so if Oregon will take the lead in something like this, and I'm glad Representative Wingard brought this up, because this is, you wonder why it's cheaper, and that's exactly why. So the federal government, drawn towards the cheap part, is giving horrible nutrition to our kids when we have fresh options two blocks away. The last part of that study that I found interesting was that I forgot it.
No, it was interesting.
It will come back.
Whatever it was, it was interesting.
It's a true statement. I found it interesting. It'll come back.
It'll come back. But we trust it'll come back.
But that study convinced me that we need to do this.
Now that you walked up here, did you want to respond to that?
No, Representative Gilliam and committee, I fully agree with what you were just saying. So.
thank you very much. Representative Roble.
Yeah, I just wanted to, Representative Shelter, I agree that this is an economic development deal, and that's where it should go, and it makes the money fund better. But there have been some very good studies done around this country on nutrition and ability to perform academically in school. So there is also a direct relationship to what you eat and how you perform. And every study that's been done where they've kept that as the one variable has shown improvement in students' performance. So there is a reason why school boards and others should get involved and be actively on top of this bill, because if they are in care about student performance. I mean, there continues to be direct links every time they do the studies. And the other one I wanted to say is that with the gardening programs, and I really liked the idea of what they were saying earlier about grading the food and raising it. But I think another part, and I guess I would ask your opinion, is that it brings the communities back to the school, because rarely do the schools do it by themselves. It's usually the master gardeners, the other people who come and help. And then during the summer, when the schools are gone, there are people that have to come and manage the gardens. And so they come back to the schools and are there when other people aren't, and they take care of the whole place. It becomes that community again, so that then it can be used at the end of the next session. And at least in my wife's garden at her elementary school, the kids actually get to harvest and eat some of the food that they produce, which is, I think, an exciting adventure for them, because usually it's kind of yuck, it came out of the dirt, but then the potatoes are really good. It's kind of like, it's a funny thing to watch. So I just comments on that.
Very briefly.
Well, and Representative Roblin added on to that. You know, this is directly related to education. It's directly related not only to just the mechanism of education, but the effectiveness of our educators. And I can promise you, in 2003, I had a bill that would have provided a tax credit, I think it was. I can't remember what it was, or a deduction, but to help relieve some of the economic imposition we put on our farmers and ranchers due to the escalated minimum wage. which I'm a supporter of the form of escalating minimum wage according to the consumer price index. I support that. I voted for it. I support it. That being said, the question was asked, why is some of this more expensive? That may well be one of the reasons why it's more expensive. But I support that. But I promise you, if I had that bill in business and labor right now, I would be hearing from those three organizations because they would perceive it as a negative impact on the general fund. This is a positive impact on the general fund, and I think mathematically, Mr. Chair, you can prove it. So why wouldn't someone who is so hyper-concerned about that area clear over there that one could argue is not necessarily directly related to education and be so hypersensitive about it, here's something that's directly related to education and is going to be a positive impact on how well and effectively we educate our children, and they're not here. Now, there are school districts here, and I'm grateful for that, and there's some labor supporters on here. But you know what? People have to, you can't be over here one way and over here the other. It's inconsistent. It drives me crazy. Same thing on cutting timber in this state and milling lumber and pulling water out of Columbia and developing that water. But don't get me going.
No,
I'm not calling anybody out, but you know what? This is a conversation right here. And they should be here.
Let's
my
accentuate the positive. Eliminate the negative. Representative Wingard.
Well, I just...
I'm being positive.
I'm a little confused, and I want to have this explained so that I can understand it. Representative Schaffler has talked about saving money and there being a net benefit to the general fund. So aside from the merits of the program, I'm trying to understand that, where it is that in the end we actually save money, and how it is that in the end the general fund is actually increased by the program. Because I don't actually see that in this material. So
a question for Representative Schaffler, I think.
Well, yeah, I think...
Right. Well, I may say, so is he the only one?
I mean, he said it.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand if that's true.
I need to understand was talking about a multiplier effect when you did your data and your studying on the neighboring economy. Am I wrong? Did I misinterpret that? Okay, I'm going to let the smart people explain it, but the whole thing about economic development in this state is we have smart people like yourselves go out and do studies showing the potential impact, the anticipated positive impact of revenue in this state. I can show you charts when the OECD hands us to show us not just what's anticipated, but historically what's happened. And I think that's exactly what your testimony was directly aimed at. Am I wrong? Okay, I'm not going to try and articulate it, but if you want to go around again one more time, I'm with you. So that's all. Representative, I'm sorry if that doesn't help you, but I heard the multiplier effect would, and we could anticipate a positive impact to our revenue in this state and this economy. Am I incorrect? All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
And we do have one more person not on this panel. I just don't want to shut Mr. Charles out.
Well, I just want to be sure I understand this. I mean, I'm looking at what looks like at the high end, $2.1 million in potential tax revenue. And I heard a cost of, say, $20-something million. So I'm open to being educated on this. But if at the end of the day the Treasury has more money after it spends some, it gets more back, I'd like to understand how that happens.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, I think maybe perhaps we're talking about two different things here. One is the mm-hmm. multiplier effect on the economy overall, and I think the question you're asking is about the tax base. And I think in that case you are correct, because even in the best case scenario, you would be spending $9.8 million, and the estimated tax revenue is $2.1 million. That said, the benefit to the overall economy is estimated to be $53 million, a huge multiplier over the 9.8.
Thank you.
Does that answer?
and one of the interesting situations for policy committee, just for those of you who don't come in front of the legislature very often, in years past, we would not have probably a ton of conversation about the effect. We would say, we love you. We love your program. This is great. Let's send it down to Ways and Means and make them worry about it. And our speaker has, by design, actually forced us to have to prioritize and not just say that to everybody who comes in front of us. So we've been holding back our bills and not advancing them to Ways and Means so we can internally prioritize. One of the frustrating parts of that is I'm not sure we have been given the authorization to actually put in here, cut this and fund this. I don't think we could do that. And Ways and Means, sure, they can. So that's our one issue that we're going to have to resolve at some point.
And just to keep everybody okay here so that they can read that both of them are saying the truth. In effect, if we're talking about general fund, Representative Schaffler is correct, because we're taking it out of lottery funds, which are not general funds, and we're transferring $2 million into general fund because it's coming from income tax. So, in fact, the actual general fund has increased by the expenditure of the lottery funds, just so both of you can be a little
bit... Only government can think that way.
Reverend Roblin was my former high school principal, and that's how he mediated everything. I mean,
okay. Chair, I don't think there's need for mediation between me and Representative Wingard. You can also say the exact same thing for everything else we spend money on, lottery funds.
That's true.
We spend a lot of money on the max line going right down.
I agree.
Okay.
Which I support, by the way.
We have the Oregonian here. I know he's going to take that one. Thank you so much, panel, all of you, for the testimony and answering of questions, and welcome to this committee. It's an interesting and entertaining time, I think. Now, I have one non-programmed presentation. John Charles. We don't know what his position is. It's going to be a surprise. It's going to be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles, president of Cascade Policy Institute. I suppose some people might think that I'm the barbarian at the gate this morning, but I'm actually not here to oppose the bill or support the bill. I'm just going to raise, since with $23 million at stake, there's some due diligence involved. I'm just going to raise some cautionary flags that no other witnesses have raised, just for you to think about, because I'm completely with the intent of the bill. I'm a little concerned about what the multiple goals are and about the unintended consequences. So, first thing is, there appear to be multiple goals. One goal is to boost local farm commodity sales. I support that. But this particular approach is a very indirect way to increase net farm income, and only a small percentage of farmers in the state would likely benefit. It seems to me you could create a lot more benefits and economic opportunity at no cost to the state by other means, such as repealing or amending a few land use laws in the state that prohibit farmers from doing things that are economically rational with their asset. I mean, I know farmers who are losing money on every transaction. So, well, if that's the case, you can't make it up in volume. What they really need is some other use for at least a portion of their land, and that use is prohibited by law. Now, like I said, allowing them to do that would have no fiscal impact and lots of upside. That would be a more direct way to help. The second goal of the bill, as I read it, is educational, especially the $3 million grant program for school gardens. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, to the extent that those gardens are sort of a laboratory, like a bio lab or a chem lab, and it's not just about what you're eating, it's about, especially for urban and suburban kids, learning more, then nutrition and other things aren't as important. So, okay, now to me, that makes a lot of sense. That's good. That's a different goal than economic development. The third goal, perhaps the glamour goal as I perceive it, is that of improving the nutritional content of school lunches by offering fresh fruits and vegetables from local sources to reduce obesity and do a whole bunch of other things. Okay, now I think that particular goal needs some careful thought for the following reasons. One is that, contrary to popular opinion, there's not a lot of evidence that students would be better off if more local foods were available. I'll give you a couple of quotes. The nutrition director for Prevention magazine in a recent column wrote, quote, "A lot of people think fresh is best, but believe it or not, frozen produce is even more nutrient-packed. That's because the moment produce is picked, it starts to lose nutrients, but freezing slows the loss. A 2007 study found that the vitamin C contents of fresh broccoli plummeted 56% in 7 days, but dipped just 10% in a year's time when frozen. In addition, the levels of disease-fighting antioxidants called anthocyanins actually increased after freezing." Just 4 weeks ago, this point was echoed by Jane Brody, the longtime personal health columnist in the New York Times, who wrote, "One myth to dispel is that fruits and vegetables must be fresh to be nutritious. Not only do canned and frozen versions usually cost less and require less preparation, but nutrient value is as good or better, and less food is wasted.
Mr. And Charles, if I might, just so to save somebody from attacking, not barbarian, the bill includes flash freezing processing for the exact reasons you've just articulated. And Mr. Truitt would be happy to tell you about the processes he has, I'm quite certain.
Okay, great. So anyway, the four key phrases to that particular previous paragraph were, you know, cost less, requires less preparation, equal nutrition content, and less waste. And so that's been the problem all along, I think, for people who actually make meals by the thousands is the cost factor per meal. The second point is student acceptability. Obviously, we already have some experience with this, the farm-to-school approach, and students frequently appear to be underwhelmed by things that their parents and teachers think are great. Not just the EcoTrust pilot, but there's a pilot down in Ashland, and in a December article in the Medford Mail Tribune, the writer wrote, quote, local organic potatoes, carrots, and onions are on the lunch menu at Ashland Middle School. Most students, however, zip past the sign promoting the district's farm-to-school pilot project and then past the lemon chicken over rice that features the root vegetables. Pizza, tacos, burritos, and submarine sandwiches are the standard bill of fare. So Tracy Harding, the coordinator of Ashland's farm-to-school program, who I don't think was here today, noted in what I would call an understatement, it's a little bit of an issue getting kids to eat the food. So now, based on my 25 years of experience as a parent and grandparent, having fought the battle every single day with kids about nutrition, hygiene, sleep, academics, I would say if the battlefield you're going to pick for control is a middle school cafeteria, the kids have a huge home court advantage. I mean, we've all been there. We understand the default culture, and it'd be great if they would actually just eat all this stuff, but I'm not sure that if we spend a lot of money to do it, that they actually will do what we want. So that just needs to be thought through. My final point is the economic effect. I understand, listening to the EcoTrust economist, that for every dollar spent locally by the two school districts, they leverage an additional 87 cents in total spending. But in that particular case, the initial cost of capital was approximately zero. It's a grant. So that doesn't mean a whole lot in a scenario where you want to spend $20 million of money that has to come, much of it, through some other source that has an opportunity cost, and that money could be spent elsewhere. And so what you're talking about is a subsidy program here, and if subsidizing by taking from one group and distributing to another made a lot of sense, and then we should stop what we're doing and instantly subsidize every single person and every single company in the state from each other, and we'd all get rich. But I don't think that actually works on a mass scale. So I think my recommendation here is, as you go forward, I think the $3 million grant program is great. The other part of it, if it turns out Ways and Means just can't get to that amount, I do agree with Representative Kotek in her earlier statement, get the infrastructure going and maybe move this as a pilot program with a cross-section of school districts and then continue to learn more about, well, if you're taking lottery money or general fund dollars and not grant money that just sort of drops in from a foundation, then what is the true economic cost benefit of that when that money could have been spent for something else, especially if it's tax money, because there's a cost of collecting tax money? And how do kids accept it? And if kids are accepting it and they're doing all the things that parents and educators want them to do, and there's a big cost benefit, and you have a little pilot to do this, then 2 years from now you have a much stronger empirical base to move forward on a broader scale. And so I think that might be a way to at least insulate this as it moves forward and keep the kernel of the idea alive. So.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Soffer, do you have a question?
If I could, please. It's really not a question, but it's directly related to the substance of this bill, and I think it was already been pointed out, I think, very well, and I never thought of it this way earlier. Someone said it's the most neglected classroom in the building, in the school, and I think your testimony speaks directly to that. Kids do what they're taught to do. And if they're skipping over yummy, good food that's good for them to some piece of crap, that's because we taught them to do that. That's really what this comes down to.
That's right.
And, I mean, my daughter, we're not perfect parents. She's a perfect child. And I'm married to a perfect woman. But, you know, the default mechanism, I think, is in humanity and ingrained in us for some reason. But I tell you what, you provide kids good, nutritious stuff to eat, I can prove it to you. I mean, I could just film my daughter for one day, and I could show you, because, one, we've taught her you can't just default to the ice cream and the cookies. If you're hungry, you got to eat this. You can have a small portion of that, but it's what we're teaching her. These kids, we're teaching them to skip over this good stuff. Be quite frank with you, we shouldn't even provide that crap. We should keep it out of the lunchroom and provide them with something. Believe me, kids are hungry, they're going to eat, just like every other human being. So I think the default mechanism is our fault, and it is neglected. And I just had to take issue with that, and maybe I'm not even taking issue with that. But thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and I have been to the lunchroom and witnessed the pilot project and talked to the kids about what they thought of the food, so I could give some first-hand testimony. But I think someone else has way more first-hand testimony than I do as a former Head Start director, and that's Representative Van Orman, who also represents lots of pear growers and cherry growers that have been referenced.
That's right, and have a farmer who's actually in the business of producing a bar, fruit bar, and trying to get USDA okay. When I started with Head Start, I did food services, transportation, budgets. Yes.
Yeah, she's not questioning you. You're free to go. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could just respond briefly.
Sorry. Offline would be great. Thanks. I just want to get Representative one chance to speak today.
Thank you. And as the food services person, Head Start has very high standards of food. Low fat, low sugar, low salt, whole grains, and 2% milk. And Representative Schaffler is right. I said that publicly. That when three-year-olds come to Head Start, the first few weeks are really quite different for them because they're eating food that they probably have not seen before. And so in Head Start, the rule is you put everything on your plate. All you have to do is a little bitty bite. We don't force anybody. But by the end of the school year, the children are eating. And Head Start has USDA reimbursement under the Child Care Food Program, so we don't have all of the political inserts in that particular part from USDA as the schools do. But it's an extremely important part of Head Start funding, and Head Start is very poorly funded, so any extra help we get is critically important. In our particular program, we emphasized scratch cooking. We did not use particularly a lot of processed food. We had requirements that the kids, we fed them three times a week. We ate yellow at least 3 days a week for the vitamin A, and then they had to have a C source every day, plus they had to have their milk. So everything that they're talking about, I would like to say we were already doing. We shopped locally. We didn't necessarily buy in bulk because I had Head Start centers all over. Tie Valley would be a good example of what happens when you're in rural Oregon and your inability to get anything particularly fresh and that they would have to travel to the Dalles to purchase food. But everything else was fresh. The cooks took pride in giving fresh breads, fresh muffins. And so I, of course, am supporting this because I just think there were times when we couldn't do a food program and we would try to contract with the school districts and we couldn't serve their food because it didn't meet the Head Start standards. So I just want to say that this is really about wholesome feeding of children. And that, for me, if it cost a little extra, because in the reimbursement that we got, it paid for the food, and we might have a little more extra so that we could pay for the labor costs. But Head Start picked up a significant portion of the labor costs. But Head Start, I think, is a good model of a food service program. And in addition, we also provided nutrition training for the families. And when we talk about what people eat, having relatives who came during the potato famine in Ireland, one of the key factors for the women out of Ireland at that time was that they lost the ability to cook anything but a potato. And I think that it's we are reaching a point where people are losing the skill to use fresh fruits and vegetables and to provide nutritious food for their families. So I just think anything that we can do ultimately to support the agricultural industry in our state that is a good business for our children, I think it's in our best interest to do that. So I apologize if I took the Schaffler mode of operation, but this is a very important bill to me.
With that, I am going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2800. Thank you, Representative Van Orman. He's going to call Mr. Charles back up now to respond. But Representative Van Orman earlier had asked me, may I testify, please? Do you want me to come to the dais or come to the, and I neglected to put her on the list, and so I was going to get Mr. Charles back up. I can't find him. He's now fled the building because he's probably upset with me for not letting him respond to Representative Schaffler. That would be my fault. I do want to open up a work session on House Bill 2763. This is our, and actually, folks, you might want to stay for this. This is our bill that allows for a local preference in contracting by state agencies, county agencies. The amendments in front of us were Representative Krieger and I chatted yesterday, and they would move the bar before the written determination needs to be...
Got it right now.
Move the bar for the written determination before the contracting agency has to make the written determination from 5% to 10%. And then there's some additional kind of strengthening of the written determination that they make a finding and they adopt an order. So there is a paper trail so the contracting agency can say why they went above the low bid by this. In this case, it would be anything more than 10%. And this, if you recall, this is the Multnomah County came and talked to us about their desire to use their county funds to buy Oregon, and they're legally prevented by state law from buying Oregon currently. And we have the opportunity to address it. Representative Krieger, Vice Chair Krieger, if you've got
the
script.
Well, I've got a script, but I want to make sure that everybody understood the dash threes, Mr. Chair.
Please.
We talked about it. I think we all talked about it. If no one objects. Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash three amendments into House Bill 2367.
No. That's the number?
Yeah. 2763?
2763.
Yeah.
This is 2763. Oh, yeah. Rev. Krieger moves to adopt the dash three amendments dated 4109. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Yep, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2363 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2763 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Only to say, Mr. Chair, if I may, that I'm glad to see that I'm inspiring freshman legislators to be troublemakers like me.
thank you, Representative Schaffler. If there's no further discussion, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Aye.
Representative Rogel.
Aye.
Representative Shaw.
Aye.
Representative Wayne.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Freeman.
Aye.
We can move this one.
Chair.
Aye. Motion passes. The bill is sent to the floor. This is myself and Cannon's bill, so I'll carry this bill. I'm going to reopen a public hearing on House Bill 2800. Mr. Charles, while you were out, I was explaining how rude I was to Representative Van Orman, and then therefore you, so I would like to have you come up and respond to Representative Schaffler's point. My apologies.
It won't take long, Mr. Chairman. The record again, John Charles, Cascade Policy Institute. With regard to the culture of the cafeteria, there was another issue recently which I was thankfully not involved in, having to do with vending machines or junk food in the teachers' lounges. So I think it's not just kids. I'm just saying that venue as a place to engage is a really big challenge. So I hope if this goes forward that we can actually show that doing this does change some behavior.
Thank you very much. And again, my apologies. I just was going to get in trouble with my vice chair.
Just to show how
we have 3 minutes. I got another bill. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2800. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2924. We have some folks here who cannot return on a carryover, so we'd like to at least get their testimony. Patty, do you want to bring the people who can't return with you? We've got a short amount of time, and I apologize. This is a bill that has to do with farmers markets and the, all you explain it.
Patty Whitney Wise, Oregon Hunger Task Force. This provides vouchers for low-income seniors, women, and children to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables at local farmers markets and certified roadside stands. I have testimony from one of the clients that did have to leave, and I believe the other one is, come on up. Yeah, please do. So if I could just read this briefly, and then we'll return for...
Definitely like to hear from her.
Yes. So this
is... 2 minutes.
Where are we? Are we in open?
We're in a public hearing.
Thank you.
My name is Heidi Becker, and I have WIC subsidized some of my nutrition for my son, who's 2.5, and also the baby that I am carrying on that is on the way. I enjoy farmers market because I miss being in the country I grew up on, fruits and vegetables, and that's what I want for my son. My son last night came home from lunch from work for lunch, my lunch break. And first thing he did when I got into the kitchen, he ran in there right with me to the fridge. I had grapes sitting on the shelf. What did he want? He wanted the grapes. So my husband got the grapes for him and washed them and gave them to him. I want my son loves his fruits and vegetables, and I appreciate the funding if it is possible. I know the economic times are hard, but this helps my budget. And this way I can store stuff for the winter for my son and for me, and just to make goods throughout the year. I do appreciate having farmers market. It's like a kid in a candy store, but it's fresh fruit. And it's enjoyable. I enjoy it. And taking my son to the farmers market, right before it closed in Rickrell, Oregon, they had a little farmer's market. I was going to pick up a head of cabbage. I didn't want to go all the way into Monmouth to the store because I was heading to my mom's house. And I also found something I hadn't seen for a long time. I'm from Southern Oregon. I saw a banana squash, and I was so excited. I hadn't seen a banana squash up in this area. And I would always make trips to go get it and stuff. And just to have that and to see that, and of course I bought it, but just to have that, I made several things out of that big banana squash. These things are huge, but they're worth it. And my son, yes, he does like his junk food, but I try to feed him healthy. And he will eat his vegetables and broccolis and carrots. And if we continue this program, if we can get everybody on board with this, it will make it better for everybody all around.
Thank you so much for traveling here. Sorry it took so long to get to you. But
it's understandable.
Great. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
Did you want to ask a question? Could you just remain for a moment?
I have a question for Patty.
Can she speak first on her other
point?
Oh,
is she going
to? Yeah, she's, I think, has some written testimony
from
someone else.
I'm happy to wait for the next.
Okay, we're going to carry this over, so we are going to still, for
so
people
that's
who
fine.
Are around. Okay. So, yes, please.
Thank you, Chair Clem.
Thank you.
What I wanted to know is that we're asking that currently the WIC program we can't use WIC vouchers for families to access farmers market. So in order to do that, we have to allocate a specified amount of dollars to do that instead of expanding the WIC.
Currently, there are two pieces to the WIC program, the regular vouchers and a WIC farmers market program nationally.
Okay.
We're tapping all of the federal dollars we can and putting a little bit of state money in, but only serving about 20% of eligible women and children. So this would invest additional state dollars to serve more women and children with fresh fruits and vegetables at the markets that supplement the WIC vouchers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty, please. And we have other witnesses. Do we think everybody else is someone who can come at another time? Yes? Okay. Thank you so much for your patience and understanding on this. I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2924, carry House Bill 2924 over. We still have House Bill 3296. I'm not going to carry it over. We'll just repost it at some point, but not necessarily the next meeting. Any other matters for the good of the order?
Did you have something?
Okay, Representative Van Orman.
Could we have the income guidelines for the WIC program?
And I believe it's in your committee.
We
can find out.
Yes. We'll get the income guidelines for the WIC. I also need to acknowledge.
No, it's all right.
This substantiates what we're doing.
No, I can do it the next time. We have some testimony from the speaker that I need to place in the record, but we'll do it when we reopen it in another time. Representative Shoffler, then Representative Gilman.
Yeah, only to respond to the Cascades comment about the vending machines. I voted to keep the vending machines out of the teacher's lounge, too. So I'm consistent with what I'm doing here.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Claire. Representative Krieger was interested in knowing more about my history of lunches in the public schools. I wanted to start with my kindergarten years.
Go adjourn the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities.